FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and well, you know the uncertainties of today, the economy, stock market looks like it's going through a major correction. Is this the big one? Is this the bear market we've all been expecting and dreading? Not sure about that, but our sponsor and good friend, Nolan Watson, is with us now. Nolan, you are CEO of Sandstorm Gold Royalties, and I highly urge you to check out the site. It's sandstormgold.com. And Nolan, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, so past couple of weeks are times that try men's souls, hasn't it been?
I would say, generally speaking, yes. I've been spending a lot of time thinking macroeconomically for a while, and for that reason, I, about 6 months ago, went entirely out of the market, completely out of the market in equities, out of the market in debt, other than my core positions in the main industry that I'm in, which is gold. And while everyone's freaking out, it's actually been pretty fun for me to watch the chaos.
Hey, well, you know, it's great when a plan comes together. It's unusual for average people to be able to time this out, but the market hasn't gone down that much overall, the big names, the FANGs. The smaller stocks have definitely taken a hit, but it must feel good to be right.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you have to be willing to be wrong, and you have to be willing to be a little bit early on a trade like that. At the end of the day, I knew that I would sleep a lot easier knowing that my money was out of the market when we were in a position where, quite frankly, the U.S. has never been before from a debt perspective and a leverage perspective. And I think it's one of those situations where people are in for a world of pain. And you know what? The markets for the last 2 weeks, I honestly don't think this is the beginning of a big blow up in the market. I think this is a hiccup. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be surprised if the market even charged a little bit higher here in the short term. But the stark reality of the situation is that the U.S. has got more debt than it ever has before. And there is going to be a world of pain that comes along to both bond markets and equity markets. And I've positioned myself in gold personally for that. And it might not be for 2 months. It might not be for a year. But whenever it happens, I'm positioned for it.
Well, that's probably a wise move because, like you say, the debt is escalating. This year alone, $1.3 trillion added to the public debt. And, you know, you hear these numbers, oh, it's a $800 billion or a $600 billion deficit. But then when you see how much the U.S. actually adds to its debt in a year, that kind of gives you a more real picture of how dire things really are.
Absolutely. I mean, the U.S. has been in a situation for a while now where their debt to GDP deficit their deficit that they're running is 4% of GDP every single year. The only other time in modern history where it's ever been higher was during the Great Recession, and that was only a very temporary point in time. So we're running at basically close to record levels. And you got to remember, this is at the end of a 10-year bull run. So when things are as good as they've ever been from an unemployment perspective in the U.S., they're still running a 4% debt to GDP levels. So right now, the U.S. national debt stands at close to $22 trillion. And that's just federal debt. You know, or when you throw on unfunded liabilities and state debt and whatnot, you're to a number that works out to just about $1 million for every U.S. taxpayer. And so if you think about that, $1 million for every U.S. taxpayer, when the median income in the United States in the year 2018 is under $40,000 a year.
Yeah, 25 years.
No, it's a Ponzi scheme. Here's another way to put it, is with $22 trillion of national debt, most people, and I ask this question every now and then, I asked my family not too long ago, and I said, guess how much money exists in the world? If you measure not just M1, which is, you know, actual money that the Fed's put out there, but M2. So after the money multiplier effect, is actually kicked in. So person A lends money to a bank and that bank relends it out and buys something with it and they put it back in the bank and relends it out. And so M2 is that measure of the total money that if you ask all those people, how much money do you have? And they ignored their debts and they just said how much money that the bank says they have. You know, that number is effectively M2. That number stands at $14.3 trillion. So if you think about that, $14.3 trillion compared to the U.S. federal debt of $22 trillion. So the U.S. government actually now can proudly say that they owe more money than exists in the entire world.
Wow. Yeah.
That's... And eventually that has to come home to roost. And I think it's going to come home to roost pretty soon here.
Think so. Huh? Well, you know, the debt has been going up really since Reagan. So that's a good 30 plus years the debt has continued to go up, 38 years. And nobody seems to have any interest in any financial discipline in the U.S., nobody at any level of government. And I just don't understand it. I mean, is it so obvious to you and I, and yet politicians live in this bubble, this dream world? I'm just mystified by it, Nolan.
I spent a lot of time on politics here, particularly in Canada. And what I can tell you from dealing with a lot of politicians is the number one thing that they're concerned about is getting reelected. And the best way to get reelected is to make promises. Yeah. And our government system works on a system of overpromise. And that's fine. We're not going to underdeliver because we're just going to spend money that we don't have and we'll borrow from the future. But eventually that comes home to roost. And typically, other than in the case of Japan, typically those problems come home to roost when debt to GDP ratios get over 100%. So when the federal debt of a country becomes more than the GDP of the country, those problems start manifesting themselves in serious ways that start affecting Main Street. And so the U.S. has crossed over that threshold in the last couple of years. They're now at a 105.2% and growing daily. There's a fantastic website called usdebtclock.org that I recommend people just spend an hour looking at all those numbers, and they'll scare the hell out of you.
Yeah, I think you summed up the problem pretty well, Nolan. It's that nobody wants to say no. Everybody expects their promises to be honored and the country be damned. And you see in Illinois and certain other states, New Jersey, those promises are getting pretty close to not being honored. And I can only imagine what's going to happen. And when you talk about borrowing from the future, to me, the best illustration of that is the auto industry. Because for at least the past 35, 40 years, anytime business gets slow, all they do, they keep raising their prices regardless. All they do is put in incentives and cut rate financing. So they take sales from the future and bring them into the present. But at some point, those sales from the future aren't going to be there, and they're going to be in a world of trouble. And I think we see that happening now. In Canada, in the U.S., auto sales are down, and maybe it's the start, and maybe that's part of what the markets are indicating here.
And it's interesting. I'm part of a group called YPO, which stands for Young Presidents Organization. Recently took one of my children on a father's daughter retreat with 20 other presidents from other organizations, and you know, done this every now and then through that organization. And I would say that if I would have done that 3 years ago and asked all 20 dads who are all presidents of countries or companies across various industries from different countries, how do you feel about the economy? How do you feel about your business? Do you think the economy is stable going forward? What do you think about next year? 2 to 3 years ago, the answers were all unequivocally feel great about things. Economy is doing great. I think next year is going to be even better. Just recently got back from a trip where I was asking the dads those same questions. And I would say 18 out of 20 dads just said, I'm terrified about the economy. My business is doing great now. Unemployment in the U.S. is low now. But I'm terrified about what the next couple of years looks like, and they're trying to figure out how do they position their businesses for it. And that's a question that I think a lot of people need to be asking themselves. How do they position their equity portfolios if that happens? There's just so much debt out there, not just at the federal government level, but personal debt, corporate debt. It's the worldwide debt is at record all-time highs. I mean, we've blown way through the records that we set prior to the Great Recession. We blew through those a few years ago, and we've set new records, and we're continuing to set new debt records, people need to be prepared for what happens when that unsustainable debt trajectory comes home.
Yeah, and come home, it's got to do it eventually. And we see the Chinese, they haven't let up on their gold purchases at all, have they?
No, not at all. I mean, China is going big into gold, and they're continuing to do that even in the face of the trade war. And I think that tells you something about what their thoughts are for the future.
Yeah, and Russia too. Both countries are still accumulating, and they haven't let up. And really, it's a decade they've been buying, at least a decade, probably before that. But the purchases didn't really come to the forefront till about 10 years ago. And, you know, I haven't seen an estimate of China's gold reserves in probably a couple of years. They're totally inaccurate and political. But you can only imagine how much gold they've accumulated.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
you know, speaking of accumulating gold, at Sandstorm, the company that I run, that's one of the things that we are very focused on, is that gold exposure for when things do start to fall apart in the economy. People tend to rush to very safe havens, and gold is one of those things. Right now, nobody cares about gold, and they're not capable of looking 6 to 12 months out, and so we've got huge amounts of cash flow. We've got royalties on assets all around the world. We're getting cash flow from all corners of the world, and we're just using that to continue to grow our portfolio. But also, we're buying back shares right now while nobody cares about it. We're putting our money where our mouth is too, and doing significant share buybacks while no one's paying attention. And then we'll reap the benefits of that when everyone's focused on gold again.
No doubt. So, and the amount of gold per share that you acquire, or royalties per share, is scheduled to increase pretty substantially over the next couple of years, all things equal.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one of the things that we try to do differently, is we think of everything on a per share basis. I know the gold industry got a bad reputation last time it was in a bull market because people were issuing shares left, right, and center. And shareholders thought that they were going to get these big gains when gold went up. And they did get gains, but not as much as they thought they were going to get because people were issuing shares. At Sandstorm, we don't issue shares anymore. We're a mature company. We've got 188 royalties around the world. We have no debt. We have a significant amount of cash flow coming in from those royalties. We should be probably upwards of $80, $90 million Canadian of free cash flow next year. And we're going to use most of that to buy back our shares. And we'll use some of it to go buy more royalties. And so we're able to actually grow our business and shrink our share float at the same time in this market. And so it's a good time for us. And like I said, when gold prices start turning around, we'll be sitting pretty.
Hey, unlike many companies now, which just buy back their shares, and like an IBM, you see their revenues continue to decrease, and then they go make reckless acquisitions. I mean, it's madness here. I mean, financial alchemy. We're kind of in a new era where people believe that something can come out of nothing. So obviously you're still going to be acquiring royalties regardless what happens, whether the market goes up or down, right?
Absolutely. We'll continue to grow our portfolio. Having said that, the time that it makes the most sense to grow a gold royalty company is when gold prices are low and valuations of gold assets are low and investors are not allocating capital to gold companies. And that's been the situation for the last couple of years. And so we've been buying a lot of different assets and gold royalties and gold streams. And we're prepared to reap the benefits of that as the market turns around. When the market gets to the top, if you see gold at $3,000 an ounce, we won't be buying royalties during that period of time. We'll just be happy that our cash flow is quadrupled and we're making tons of money, and we'll pay a big dividend.
Yeah, hey, dividends are nice. And hey, one thing I find so interesting looking at your streams, and you can take a look at every single stream that Sandstorm owns. You just have to go to the website, which is sandstormgold.com. What I find it amazing is the geographical diversity of your portfolio of royalty streams. I mean, I know we talked last time, you said there are places you won't go, but it seems like there's way more places that you will go if it looks promising and it meets your metrics and your business model.
I guess one of the sayings in the industry is that God made gold, but the devil spread it around. It's absolutely everywhere in the earth. And so we go to most countries and we'll buy royalties on assets in most countries and we'll just stay away from the extremes. So we've got, I'm not going to name all the countries, but we're in Canada, the United States, Mexico, Brazil, Argentina. We're all in numerous countries in Africa and Asia and Australia. You name it, we've probably got a royalty there. There are some extremes like Russia we don't buy royalties in, or China we don't buy royalties in. We'll stay away from places like Venezuela, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But we think that there's the ability of politicians to act incredibly irrationally for short periods of time around the world is tremendous. So the best defense against that is to be in many countries at the same time. So you build a portfolio of 190 things, and it doesn't matter what any government's doing on any particular day. The company still turns out positive cash flow and makes money for shareholders.
It's the ultimate in diversification against political risk, that's for sure. And when you started the company back in 2008, you started buying royalties in 2009, did you ever think you would acquire this many and this diverse? I know you had a vision for the company, but have you exceeded the vision?
I would say no. We sort of knew what we were getting into. I had been a C-level executive of a streaming and royalty company prior to that, which is one of the top two streaming royalty companies in the world. And so I knew the industry well, knew what we were getting into, and we have done basically what we set out to do. It's interesting. We've been growing the company for 9 years now. Six of the years, the gold price has been going down, so we're excited to be reaping the rewards of the hard work we've been doing and in the doldrums. And we're excited to see what this business is capable of doing cash flow wise when we're at the peak of the market with all the assets we bought.
And it just shows how good your model is, because even if gold stays at the 1200 plus range for the next 3-4 years, with the royalties coming on stream, the production, your cash flow is still going higher.
Yeah, to put it in perspective, if the gold price doesn't change, it stays here at around 1250. If we do nothing, we buy no more assets, and all we do is buy back our shares for the next 3 years, 3 years from now, once a few of the assets that we've recently purchased, once those mines are built and are up and running, 3 years from now, we should be trading, if our share price doesn't change, it would work out to about 3.5 times enterprise value to EBITDA. Like, it would take 3.5 years from that point forward to cash flow the value of the entire company. That's how depressed prices are in the gold space right now. And we have a significant amount of growth coming online. So we know that if we just stay the course, even if the gold prices don't go up or share price, I personally expect it to re-rate significantly. Although I don't control the future, I think it would be very, very abnormal for a world-class streaming and royalty company to trade at 3.5 times enterprise value to EBITDA.
Yeah, and world-class, it certainly is. Like I say, you can just go over to the site, sandstormgold.com, and all the streams are laid out there. It's amazing reading. It is, Nolan, one of the most transparent company websites that I've ever encountered. You don't need a CPA, an accounting degree, or degree in finance to understand the company's operations, because I don't have any of them. I'm just a recovering attorney. I know a little something about finance, but it's so easily understandable. And there's no like bombshells in the footnotes either. Your accounting really is totally transparent and clean.
Well, it helps when the business model underlying it is clean. At the end of the day, we're a business that we own royalties and we get checks in the mail, and those checks are our revenue, and we have very little expenses. So
yeah.
Hey. Pretty simple. So the accounting should be simple.
I just remember in 2008 when the first bank started blowing up, and I was at a conference, and I was a real high-powered financial analyst. I mean, the guy was brilliant. He ran a value-based mutual fund at the time. Hedge funds weren't as big back then. And somebody said, should we buy Citibank? And he said, look, if you can read their financials and you can understand what's in those footnotes, and if you're convinced that there's nothing in those footnotes that's going to blow up, then maybe it's a good buy. But I don't have that confidence level. And then, you know, you see companies that are really focused at what they do, and they tell the world exactly what they're doing, and they don't get the attention they deserve, but eventually the quality shines through and rises to the top.
Absolutely.
So we're looking for some exciting times. I'm sure, like you said, even though the prices are slightly depressed now, deals are still coming across your desk, so there's not going to be a challenge for future growth.
No, there's definitely no shortage of opportunities to buy things. The challenge right now for us is managing what, in this environment, so we expect gold prices to go up, what do you want to buy? Do you want to buy the next royalty, or do you want to buy back your own shares? And so on a weekly basis, we're having to make those trade-off decisions.
Yeah, and that's a difficult decision. But when the stock is trading as low as Sandstorm is, then you got to make the decision, because sometimes it's a better buy, unlike the IBMs of the world. So anyways, hey, you want to find Sandstorm? It's sandstormgold.com. The symbol on the TSX is SSL. On the New York Stock Exchange American, it's SAND. And that's it for now. Nolan, thanks so much. Always great speaking with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.